All right, so we're continuing on with our series of interviewing Microsoft board members, and today we're with Dina Dublon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Excellent. So I guess the first question is, what do you do? And tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, I spent most of my professional career in a bank at JPMorgan Chase. Actually, I started as a trainee in one of the predecessor banks in the trading floor. This is about 30 years ago, so it's a long time ago. I joined the trading floor as a trainee of what was then Chemical Bank in New York. And I would say that experience of being part of a trading floor 30 years ago was intense, was challenging, and provided me, in many ways, the foundation for my professional career for the subsequent 20-plus years in the bank. So the learning curve was about markets. Was about interest rate, yield curves, foreign exchange rates, how to trade foreign exchange, how do foreign exchange rates vary according to interest rates in different countries, what is arbitrage, what is hedging, when does it work, when doesn't it work, etc. So there was a tremendous learning curve for me in terms of markets. It was the era before PCs. So at that stage of the game, I would say one of the value adds I had as I joined the trading floor was actually programming calculators.
Wow.
For whether it was TI, Texas Instruments, or HP calculators, but it was programming calculators to on a more systematic basis, quote future prices. There was not yet a futures market. There was the beginnings of a future market. So it was a great professional grounding in markets. And I would say on the personal level, the experience was very valuable. It was really the beginning of opening up trading floors to women. So I was in the first MBA crop that included women into the trading floor. The trading floor was quite a homogeneous group, young males, most of them with undergraduate degrees, and with what I presume we would label today a hostile environment for women. But it was also an environment that made it very clear to me the value of having a sense of humor about yourself, and how that eases up awkward situations. And I would say it was probably as awkward or more awkward for the men in the trading floor to absorb a group of women coming in to join the trading floor. So it was about a sense of humor. It was also about learning at a personal level to the value of asking for what you want, kind of the basic thing being you don't ask, you don't get. If you ask, you may not get, but you still have to ask in order to get. And that was true relative to compensation, relative to many other issues in the floor. So it was a great personal learning, and it was obviously professionally very, very valuable for the rest of my career. Having said that, you know, I joined the trading floor, but I didn't stay in the trading floor for very long. So I moved on. What became clear to me is that my interests were quite a bit broader than the P&L at the end of the day, whether I traded well or didn't trade well for that day. So I had a much greater interest in what I would call the battlefield of banking. So understanding how the bank made money in many other divisions in the institution. And I did work very hard to move inside the organization into many different positions, which in many ways is what made me the professional that I am today, which was a much more rounded background in terms of experience.
Absolutely. And of course, that's what helps you get to the CFO of a multinational bank.
So it definitely was extremely helpful to get to the CFO position in the company. And this is a company that over a period of the last 15 years of my career was every 2-3 years merging with another large institution. So these seismic events were happening where Chemical acquired, merged with Manufacturers Hanover, with Chase Manhattan, with JP Morgan, eventually with Bank One in the Midwest, and many other smaller regional banks. So it was a period of great change, consolidation, and all the challenges associated with bringing together large companies, both the operational complexity, as well as, again, the human side associated with uncertainty of mergers and letting lots of people go in the process. So yes, that I would say my career was defined by being part of a consolidating, deregulating industry as well, so kind of broadening of powers of what we could do, changing competitive landscape. And the fact that I spent as much time as I did on the line, that I acted, you know, that I was a co-head of a division in investment banking prior to coming back to finance, et cetera. All those were important elements once I became the chief financial officer of the company.
Excellent. I mean, it just seems like, I mean, to most people, banking is checking account, savings account, need some cash, give me a loan. It's incredibly complex,
yes.
The work that goes on.
And it is definitely much more than taking deposits and making loans.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You got to get the money.
Yeah, we do.
So for people who, you know, don't know what the board does, I mean, in some sense, can we talk a little bit about what is a board of directors? What do you guys actually do?
The first point is that having a board that is independent of management is a requirement. It's a legal requirement for public companies in the US. So we are a group of people that are not engaged in active management in the company. We come from very different backgrounds, and we can talk about the value of having that, but what is it that we do? The mandate is to be an oversight of management for developing a strategy and for the implementation, so monitoring execution of a strategy, monitoring performance. So the role as defined by law is a role of oversight. It's a role of oversight that is there to take into account the interests of stakeholders in the company. We actually do the work by working in committees for part of our responsibilities, small groups that go more in depth into certain topics, whether they are financial control issues or compensation, where I chair the committee here on that topic, or governance of the board or antitrust, etc. So there will be, we divide ourselves into groups of three, sometimes four board members that deal more in depth with particular issues, and then we get the whole board around the table listening to management describe, justify, in essence become both a sounding board to management as well as a role of assuring that a broad range of challenges to the company have been taken into consideration, have been weighed by management in the recommendation that they have for the board in terms of an action plan.
And so when, a president of a division wants to go in a certain direction,
yes,
he or she,
yes,
will come to you guys and say, this is what I would think we should do, and then you give feedback to that?
Yes. We will have a business, you know, the presidents of the businesses come and talk to the board about how well they are doing relative to plan, budget that they had for the current year, as well as their vision and their plans for the, you know, near term and sometimes longer term. for their business, and they will engage with us in a give and take, where as listeners, we will be asking questions. What has been considered, what hasn't been considered, how did competitor actions were taken into account or not taken into account. And it is not so much, from my perspective, presuming that we know better than management, because we don't. So what we, I would say that, the, you know, I have this past year been teaching at Harvard Business School. I took on, I joined [S2] Nice. [S1] The faculty at Harvard Business School. But, you know, we referred in the classroom to the role of the board, similar in a way to the role of external auditors, as being the credibility enhancers for the representation of the results of the company and the plans of the company as being fair and accurate.
Sure.
So I would say our role is very much secondary to the role of management, but it is one of the institutions that exist to contribute to better functioning of capital markets. So you have shareholders, you have management that are supposed to be working on behalf of shareholders, as well as taking into account the interests of other stakeholders in what the company does. And you have then, you know, investors and analysts and rating agencies, but you have next to management both the external auditors and then from a different angle, the independent board of directors, providing a certain level of credibility enhancement to what management is saying is a fair representation of the company's business results and business plan.
Excellent. Now, in terms of diversity, it's clear that the board is, there's diversity in both, you know, male and female, you know, the biological diversity, but then there's also diversity in knowledge and specialty. Why is that so important for the board?
I would say one of the things that a board needs to watch for, and maybe the most important thing for a group of independent directors sitting around the table and listening to management, is we have to watch for groupthink, for too quick a consensus. And I believe that having a group of people that have very different business experiences, they may be very geographically, so some of us will have had experience in Europe, operating in Asia, operating in South America. So it is both geographic diversity, it is definitely the breadth of business experience, that will vary from looking at a, you know, in what ways the commitment of a BMW to the ultimate consumer experience in driving a car is relevant or not relevant to Microsoft's commitment to the ultimate consumer experience in using its products. The same is true about the, you know, how do you deal with the long-term management challenges associated with very deep R&D that you have in pharma companies, comparing that to a technology company.
Well, great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.